As the 2006 midterm elections approached, an era of Republican hegemony in Washington faded. War, corruption cases, and episodes of sexual misconduct by several Republican office holders set conditions for a Democratic surge in November. As Tillerson settled into authority and Raymond departed toward the end of the year into full retirement, Ken Cohen and his Washington colleagues refined their public policy strategies so they could respond not only to the proselytizing of Al Gore, but also to the larger challenge of inconvenient Democrats. Under Lee Raymond, ExxonMobil had aligned itself with the Republican Party to a greater extent even than other large oil and industrial corporations. Ken Cohen chaired the ExxonMobil Corporation Political Action Committee, reporting to the chairman's office. Cohen made decisions about the PAC's political donations only after holding internal hearings with senior executives from Washington and the major business divisions in Houston and Fairfax. The PAC distributed about $700,000 during each two-year election cycle. During the 2000 and 2004 cycles, only 5% of those contributions went to Democrats. That was the lowest percentage of any of the largest oil corporations active in American politics. The PAC's rate of contribution to Democrats crept up slightly as the party's tide seemed to be lifting during the 2006 cycle, but it remained in single digits. BP did not make political donations in the United States under John Brown. Chevron and Shell's American subsidiary generally gave between a fifth and a quarter of their contributions to Democrats. Even Conoco, the most explicitly conservative oil company after ExxonMobil, gave about 15% of its PAC money to Democrats. Ken Cohen had dispatched Walt Buchholz to the Washington office, the issues manager who advised anti-Kyoto groups such as the Heartland Institute, to work as a volunteer at the 2004 Republican convention in New York, alongside other lobbyists. Raymond had also approved a six-figure donation to fund George W. Bush's second inaugural festivities. The ExxonMobil chief maintained a few friendships with industry-friendly Democrats, such as John Dingell of Michigan, but the party knew where ExxonMobil stood as a corporation in partisan competition. "There is no question there is a new phase of scrutiny for Exxon. They have a self-righteousness that sooner or later will catch up with them," said New York Senator Charles Schumer, a longtime nemesis of the K Street office. Wisconsin's Democratic Senator Herb Kohl, a career business executive whose family founded an eponymous retail chain, declared that ExxonMobil reminded him of the tobacco industry. "We need a conversation with Democrats," Dan Nelson told his colleagues at the ExxonMobil office on K Street as the 2006 midterms neared. That meant redirecting more ExxonMobil PAC donations to Democratic candidates. The problem was that ExxonMobil made almost all of its decisions on the basis of mathematical analysis, and under the corporation's internal, unpublicized political ranking system, the key vote system, Democrats looked hopeless. The system was linked to the issues management binder that Cohen kept, the key public policy issues on which ExxonMobil had formulated positions. Analysts identified legislative votes in Congress that were related to the issues list in Cohen's binder. Congresspeople and senators were then each rated on the basis of the votes they cast on these issues, much as liberal and conservative advocacy groups publicly rated members on votes tied to their ideological litmus tests. No Democrat in Congress scored above a 50% rating under the ExxonMobil key vote system. Even John Dingell, an industry-friendly committee chairman, did no better than 30%. Even rock-solid Republicans from Midwestern farm states scored poorly because they supported subsidies for corn-based ethanol, which ExxonMobil opposed. Overall, in the view of its internal critics, the system failed to distinguish between truly key votes and routine ideological votes in Congress, when congresspeople and senators cast votes because, effectively, they had no political choice but to appease local voters or ride the party line. ExxonMobil's rigid adherence to the key vote numbers had helped drive PAC giving toward the very safest Republicans, a fact that had seemed to bother Lee Raymond not at all, but which had deprived ExxonMobil of ties to Democrats who might be sympathetic to at least some of its lobbying priorities. Cohen and Tillerson eventually agreed, after discussions within the PAC committee during 2006, that they would have to take a wider view. The Washington office was a generally congenial place to work. Anniversaries marking longevity as an ExxonMobil employee, 10 years, 15, 20, 25, were celebrated with cakes and huzzas, as were birthdays. There was some ideological diversity in the office. Susan Carter, a Democrat, lobbied the Bush administration on ExxonMobil's behalf, and Lori Jackson worked to make global health and women's issues a priority, influenced by the multiple Hillary Clinton connections at the office. On the whole, however, this was a lobbying shop constructed by and for Republicans. Nelson's congeniality went only so far. To insist that his lobbyists become good time managers, he would lock them out of meetings if they turned up late. Inside the Washington offices of Chevron and British Petroleum, there was an explicitly international atmosphere. Chevron's Nigeria lobbying specialist was a Nigerian, for example. At ExxonMobil's office on K Street, there was less diversity and more of a military flavor. The ExxonMobil lifers who lobbied Capitol Hill, Gene Mitchell in the House of Representatives, and Buford Lewis in the Senate, worked alongside issue managers with subject specialties such as tax policy or chemical industry regulation. The largest contingent of lobbyists remained the foreign policy specialists working with Robert Haynes, who spent most of their time maintaining relations at foreign embassies and at Foggy Bottom. The only Democrats the K Street team knew well on Capitol Hill tended to be those from southern or western states who voted like moderate Republicans on energy and tax issues. What a House of Representatives ruled by Nancy Pelosi would mean for ExxonMobil was not a question the corporation's Washington office could answer with great sophistication.